From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the December 21st edition of Commodity Week. '12 will go into the record books under the category of drought, yet the marketplace is beginning to fade. We'll talk with Daryl Good about the growing season and his expectations for 2013 in this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. We'll talk with Daryl Good in just a moment. He's an ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There under the calendar section, about halfway down the page, hit that tab, and you'll find all of the events we'll be hosting this winter meeting season, including our January the 25th Voices of Illinois Agriculture fundraiser. Orianne Samuelson will be in Bevere Hall on that evening, along with Paul Cooley and Wayne Nelson, Jackie Bakes, myself, and Gary Schnittke, raising funds for the Agricultural Communications Program and the Hospitality Management Program in the College of Aces. If you'd like to come, please do visit willag.org. Look at the event schedule for Voices of Illinois Agriculture. It's $100 per person, and you do get a signed copy of Orion's brand new book. He'll be there to personalize it January the 25th. Now, here the way the markets finished up for the 21st day of December 2012. March wheat this past week had a high of $8.22¾, a low at $7.82½. The settlement price there at $7.92, down 22 cents. July wheat, the harvest month with the new crop, $8.08¾ in Chicago at the CME Group for the soft red, 24¼ cents lower. March corn, a $7.34¾ high, the low on the week at $6.87½. Remember, these the high and the low, and the trade all week long, and March corn settled the week 28¾ cents lower than it did the previous Friday at $7.02 a bushel. December corn of next year, $6.06¾, down 21¼ cents on the weekly charts. January soybeans, $15.08¾, the high, the low at $14.02¾. The settlement price, $65¼ lower this week at $14.30¾. And November beans at $13.05, finished down 17 cents for the week. February live cattle, $133.57½, up 97½. And the March feeders at $154.77½. Down 25. April lean hogs on the week, $91.62½, finished $1.22½ higher. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by ag economist from the U of I, Daryl Good, to take a look back at the marketing and growing season for 2012, and of course to talk about the 2013 growing and marketing season as well. Let's start with a very unique 2012. Can you tell me how the marketing season began last January?
Well, in the case of corn and to some extent soybeans, the marketing year January began with all the focus on South America. Particularly Argentina was in the throes of a very severe drought, very high temperatures, dry weather in December, and declining corn production prospects there. Then as we moved into the calendar year, we saw fairly severe drought conditions unfold in Brazil and ended up with a very small soybean harvest in both countries, Argentina and Brazil, along with a small corn harvest in Argentina. Then as we moved into June, of course, drought conditions unfolded here in the U.S. and got progressively worse through July, and prices really made a U-turn beginning about mid-June. And we reached highs late August, early September in the corn and soybean markets. Since then, corn prices kind of dropped about a dollar and then flattened out. Soybeans, since the U.S. crop turned out to be a bit better than the early forecast, soybean prices broke earlier and harder. We dropped about $3 from the high moving in towards the end of the year. And then, of course, as we ended the year in December, both commodities were reflecting some weakness. In the case of soybeans, increasing confidence that South America now will have a big crop in 2013. We're seeing some fairly large cancellations of export sales, particularly to China. And in the case of corn, just a very anemic export market, declining ethanol crush, uncertainty about feed demand, but we'll get more light on that with the stocks report in January. But we're kind of in that tail part of the long, short crop, long tail on corn, I think. You know, we kind of know that when prices spike because of drought, that they eventually come back down to closer to pre-drought levels. And we're kind of in that process as we end the year 2012. And we'll see how that unfolds next year, what the pace of decline is.
When we came through the month of January last year, can you remind us quickly of a couple of things that USDA told us about? One, their January report, and then, of course, their numbers as they put forward some acreage, unofficial, relatively speaking, but acreage for corn that was really big.
Yeah, in the case of all the major commodities, the USDA does a benchmark or a forecast, and they release those early in the calendar year. And in the case of corn, they were showing prospects for their calculation of trend yield that was quite high, 164 bushels per acre, and put that on top of an increase in acreage. They were forecasting a very large crop. And then as we moved into the planting season with a record early planting of the corn crop, USDA actually bumped their yield projection another two bushels. And I think, you know, reflects long-standing research that shows early planting does increase your yield potential. So they bumped it a couple bushels.
And we were looking at a 96 million acre corn crop.
Right. And so we were talking a crop of 14 and a half billion bushels, and prices continuing to move lower. And obviously we got the acreage, but we did not get the yield in 2012. And so in retrospect, you can say those forecasts, you know, maybe look foolish, but I think they reflected conditions at the time.
Does it tell you anything about what we might see this year? There are some really big numbers that are starting to come out. Informa, in this last week and a half to 2 weeks, had a number that was 99 or something along those lines in terms of millions of acres.
Well, I think we start by saying early acreage estimates should be heavily discounted. I mean, there's just not enough information to make really very accurate or very confident estimates about what farmers are going to do. Remind our listeners that even USDA waits till March to do a survey of intentions, and then we see year in and year out that acreage differs quite a bit from intentions in most years. A couple million acre deviation from intentions is not unusual. So to think that farmers know at this point what they're going to plant, or that you can accurately estimate that, I think we have to discount those numbers. But having said that, I think there is some danger that at current price levels, the corn market may entice too many acres of corn in 2013. We primarily look at the ratio of corn to soybean prices, new crop, and I think most people doing budgets would say in the heart of the Corn Belt, corn still pencils out to be more profitable than soybeans. So the market is attracting more acres with the price that it's at right now. But I think if we do see any kind of return towards trend yield, the message would be we really don't need more corn acres in 2013. And so unless prices change, I think there is some danger that we can overdo it. You know, we argued through much of the early part of the past decade that the corn market was not reflecting enough yield risk, that we kind of had this concept that corn yields are bulletproof and are going to go up every year. And so when we looked at new crop prices, they didn't really reflect much of a production risk. I think we've maybe this year swung the other way a little too far. The market kind of thinks it's never going to rain again, and it's building in more than the normal amount of yield risk for 2013 that I don't think is really warranted at this point. So I think we need to see some price adjustments to reduce the motivation for corn acres. Otherwise, we are setting ourselves up for the potential of a very large corn crop next year.
We'll come back to that in the second part of the program. I'd like to stay a little bit with the beginnings of the growing season for 2012 and maybe go all the way back to the fall of 2011 because there's a big difference today than there was then. We were grinding ethanol at a rapid pace at that point. Not to say that the ethanol grind at this point is slow by any means, but there was just a big difference, and part of that had to do with some government subsidies and such that were being expired in January of 2012.
No, that's an excellent point. I mean, there's a lot made just comparing ethanol crush year over year without judging last year's pace, and you're exactly right. In the last quarter of 2011, we were making a lot of ethanol knowing that the blender's tax credit was going to expire on December 31. So we crushed a lot of corn for ethanol. We built ethanol inventories, and then the blenders captured the tax credit on those gallons. And then this fall, with the higher corn prices bumping up against the blend wall a little bit, declining crush margins. We are seeing crush running 10-11% under a year ago, but again, the point you make, a year ago was a pretty high number. So yes, ethanol crush is weak, but maybe not quite as weak as the year-over-year numbers would imply, and we may see some leveling out of that as we go forward.
On the other hand, fundamentally, the export market is just truly weak.
I mean, there's hardly any adjectives to describe the corn export market at this point. We're not selling anything. We're not shipping anything. First quarter exports for the marketing year, by my calculations, we're at a 41-year low, and we haven't seen any improvement in the month of December. I think potentially USDA is going to be forced to lower its projection for the year at some point. I mean, we're still optimistic that this really anemic rate will pick up at some point, but the further we go into the marketing year, the more ground we have to make up. And at some juncture, we just say, unless some other part of the world runs into trouble production-wise, we're going to have some difficulty.
Can you reconcile that really slow export pace in your mind with, I think your mindset in the past has been, really, no matter what the U.S. dollar does as much as people like to say the dollar has an impact on exports, that exports are pretty clearly year in and year out almost the same. There are some deviations, but this one seems to be really outside of that marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, we look at all of our major buyers of corn, and historically the most stable market is Japan, but South Korea, Taiwan, Mexico are our big markets for corn. And what we've seen for the most part is that U.S. corn has been priced out of that market to some extent so far this year. We have to recall that while the Argentine harvest earlier this year was quite small, Brazil actually had a very large corn crop and have been exporting large quantities of corn that has been competing with the U.S. U.S. corn has been higher priced. Now, the Black Sea region has been very aggressive exporting wheat, providing a lot of competition for corn. So I think it's the drought, the small supplies, the high price of U.S. corn, and the world has just looked to other alternatives. And the argument has been, well, at some point, the supplies of those alternatives are depleted, and then the world comes back to the U.S. And that's kind of built into the USDA's forecast, that even though their forecast is pretty low for the year, it implies a pretty rapid pickup from where we are right now. And so we'll have to see whether that happens or not. The longer we go without that happening, the more worrisome it is.
Which way do you lean?
You know, I come back. I think eventually we'll have to lower the projection somewhat. So, yes, the rate will pick up, but we won't see a full recovery, I don't think.
If we lower the projection and there are crops that are able to replace that, and maybe more importantly, areas of the world that can replace it efficiently that have showed up, will we lose those marketplaces?
We won't lose them permanently, but it's kind of a The world takes advantage of the opportunity. We got small supplies, high prices here. They go to the cheaper source of supplies. And so the question is, will those cheaper sources emerge again in the coming year? Right now, both Argentina and particularly Brazil are on track for another large harvest. And so we are going to have some competition.
We're talking today, of course, with Darrell Good, ag economist from the OVI. More in 2 minutes.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look back at the weather impacting agriculture in 2012. This year has been another extraordinary one for weather and its impacts on agriculture in South America and the U.S. For the second year in a row, weather extremes have dominated crop production seasons. In Argentina, the year started with extreme drought that seriously reduced corn and soybean production for the crops harvested during our spring and summer. Now the new growing season is underway and weather problems once again dominate, only this time from too much rain. Excessive rainfall across prime production areas of Argentina since September has hampered their spring planting. The late planting dates will likely impact yields. Of course, the biggest weather news to impact agriculture in 2012 was the extreme drought to hit the central U.S. Corn Belt. It's hard to remember that just a year ago we were looking back at one of the wettest years on record across the Corn Belt. In fact, the wettest year on record for Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. This year actually started with moisture surpluses. However, that all changed in a hurry. Spring was dry and summer was even drier. The timing of this drought was centered on corn emergence through pollination and was the worst for corn in the central U.S. in terms of coverage since 1956 and in terms of magnitude since the Dust Bowl year of 1936. The drought has eased a bit in the central Corn Belt, but dryness is still of concern to the west of the Mississippi. And extreme drought continues in the central and southern plains. The newly planted hard red winter wheat is going into dormancy, poorly established in many areas. For Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma combined, May through October was the driest such six-month period on record, even drier than during the Dust Bowl years. Dryness concerns in the plains and Corn Belt will certainly dominate conversations heading into the new year. With a look back at agricultural weather in 2012, I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
You're listening to Commodity Week, a production of Illinois Public Media. This is a special holiday edition. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Darrell Good joins us in studio, ag economist from the U of I. When you last talked with us just a few moments ago, you had mentioned Brazil and Argentina. Of course, this is a part of the world where corn has begun to come into the crop rotations more thoroughly than it has in the past, in particular in Brazil, but that we think of mostly as a soybean production area. Last year, they had a really tough crop. You told us about that at the beginning of the program. This year, they looked set up to be in a much better position to produce a soybean crop.
They really do. The official estimates from both the USDA and Brazilian sources indicate there was probably a few more acres planted to soybeans. And with the wet spring in parts of Argentina, there's reports that perhaps some of the intended corn acres ended up being planted to soybeans or will be planted to soybeans. So that part of the production equation is in place. There's more acres. Weather conditions in the early part of the growing season there have been generally favorable. On again, off again, a little bit of dryness, a little bit of too much precipitation, but overall not a lot of stress on that crop at this point. And so the prospects for a return to normal yields or perhaps a little higher are still in place. And so if we do the math, say we got more acres and a return to trend yields there, we are looking at the potential of a record large harvest in the early part of 2013.
How quickly will that push the price of soybeans lower?
You know, it will be a gradual thing. As the market becomes more confident that that crop is going to make it, prices will reflect that. And in my mind, that has begun here late 2012. reflected, I think, primarily in the cancellation of export sales of U.S. soybeans. China is basically saying they're now more confident that South American supplies will be a more abundant and lower priced come next spring. And so they've probably overbooked a bit on U.S. beans, and they're now saying we won't need those, we don't think. And so I think it's beginning to show up and will gradually increase as that crop matures.
Can you put that into perspective with the U.S. soybean crop that was harvested this last fall, which under the drought conditions, because of Isaac and some of the rainfall that came in early September, where it was not nearly as bad as what happened to the corn market, but still it was a short crop.
It was a short crop. You know, we've been accustomed to a crop of 3.3 billion bushels, and this one came in, you know, a bit under 3 billion. So you'd say a 10% shortfall, at least in production, not as large as the 15 to 20% that we were concerned about in July. And, you know, that crop has been consumed at a very rapid pace to this point. Because of the short South American supplies, we've seen domestic crush at a very high level, much higher than the last year. The export boom has been well advertised. But the market basically said, you know, we're willing to let consumption proceed at a very rapid pace, a pace that we know can't be maintained but will not need to be maintained if South America has a normal crop in 2013. And so now we're beginning to see that expectation come into place that, yes, we're using a lot of U.S. soybeans, but demand is going to fairly quickly shift away from U.S. towards South America.
This fall, when I asked you about marketing corn, maybe soybean as well, but particularly for corn, but let's deal with both crops. I asked for corn, if you had a good corn crop and it was in good condition here in our part of the world, whether you should hang on to it in order to maybe garner a higher price. And you simply said that hasn't really worked very well in the past. and I guess the highs have been in, so the answer is it hasn't worked as well as it. You're right that it really hasn't worked as well as maybe as just selling it across the scale.
No, that's right. I mean, corn prices peaked at or slightly before harvest, and we've come down. We'd argue the price has still been at a historically high level. We've seen prices north of $7 all fall, and so corn that's been stored is still being sold at a profitable price, but certainly well off the highs. And I think, you know, we just had to take some confidence that prices would behave as they had in the past, that under short crops, drought conditions, those extremely high prices just do not persist for long periods of time. Consumption adjusts and production rebounds and prices come back down to where they started. And it was just a question of how quickly and what that pattern looked like. And that's kind of what's unfolding at this point.
Yeah, at the same point, I recall you telling me that this one could be a little different than other droughts that we've seen in the past in terms of the marketing, that it might be more of an up and down pattern, a little bit rougher a ride, relatively right. Speaking.
Yeah, and we have seen, I think, since the peak and then the initial decline, we have seen a sideways pattern, but that trading range has been quite large since September. So the up and down has materialized, but we haven't seen much of a trend other than sideways, and now it looks like we're looking at another leg lower here as we end the calendar year.
Farmers would like that leg lower not to come until at least after the crop insurance setting month in February. Yeah. Do you suppose that can happen, or do they really need to take action on the new crop?
Well, I think couple things. One, we do have a very important set of USDA reports on January 11th, not directly affecting new crop, but will tell us what our current inventory of old crop corn is, which will reflect the final estimate of last year's production. So there is some potential that you get some friendly numbers in that report that would buoy both old crop and new crop prices. But barring that, I think, you know, this late year storm or early winter storm, however you want to characterize it, that we're that we're seeing move through the Plain States and into the Midwest, I think, is a subtle reminder that it can rain again, and that while we are concerned about subsoil moisture, that is not the overriding factor that's going to determine next year's corn and soybean yields. It will be precipitation next summer. So I think the talk about more acres, the realization that yields really could recover fully in 2013, I think that's going to continue to weigh on prices and move them lower. And I'm less optimistic now than I was just a week or 10 days ago that these high new crop prices will persist through February. I think we may see some slightly lower trend as we move through the new year.
Why is that? Is it because there's so many, it's so high that it's going to cause acres to be planted to corn, and you just don't think we need that many acres?
I think that's a big part. If we keep seeing these big numbers, 99, 100 million acres of corn planted, if we continue to see those bannered around, and if we see some less concern about soil moisture and more of a leaning towards a very large crop, then the market is going to have to come down either earlier or later. Earlier would, in my mind, in some respects, would be better, because you say, if we don't really need the acreage, let's not plant it. So an early decline in prices might moderate corn acres a bit. But then on the other hand, you say, well, from a marketing standpoint, we don't want those prices to decline too early because of the crop insurance issue. So the best scenario would be hold up until March 1 and then decline.
Let's turn our attention just a little further out, 2013, 2014, beyond. You and Scott Irwin have done some work as it relates to the RFS and suggest that it may very well be that soybeans are the new leader in the commodity marketplace.
Yeah, I mean, we took a look at the RFS and as it relates to advanced biofuels moving forward. And so you just ask the question, if that legislation stays in place and is not amended by the EPA for any reason, what are the implications? And it says that we really are not going to be able to meet the advanced biofuel mandate as now established with imported Brazilian ethanol, for example. We can do some of that, but because we're bumping up against the blend wall on ethanol here, we can't bring in a lot of ethanol. There's just no room for it. So that puts the pressure back on biodiesel to meet the ever-increasing advanced biofuel mandate. And if that happens, then you've got a kind of a bullish market there. And so there is a bit of a collision course there, I think. And it's a little bit scary for what it means for soybean oil or vegetable oil demand in general.
Daryl, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Todd.
University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good joins us on this holiday edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.